This is Leader ReadyCast, a monthly podcast featuring real-world lessons, best practices, and action-oriented insights for the you're-it moments when you're called upon to lead. Leader ReadyCast is the official podcast of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, a joint program of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the Center for Public Leadership at the Harvard John F. Kennedy School of Government. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Resilience was a hot topic about 15 years ago. It's back thanks to the experience of the pandemic and because of the emergence of more complex and interrelated risks. Now, my thinking on resilience, and I've been writing and thinking about this for about 15 years now, has always drawn on three perspectives I found when I did my initial research. The psychological. This is where resilience is about moving through adversity with hope and confidence. We talk about sort of, you know, the grit, the mental grit to get through things. And there's material science. That's what resilience is all about, bending without breaking. And I think a lot of our obviously our built environment, but also our network environment falls into that category. And then biology, where resilience means changing form to preserve function as you adapt to the environment. That's evolution, right? And what's interesting is in our organizations and our communities, we actually need all three of these. They're very interrelated. Academically, they may be separate disciplines, but in practice, they very much come together. And we'll be talking about that today. So resilience is our topic for this episode. And my guest is Heather Costa. She's the Director of Technology Resilience at the Mayo Clinic. The Mayo is one of the premier healthcare systems in the world. And like most organizations, it's ever more reliant on technology. Heather has led the organization to understand the risks it faces. And I think as important, the opportunities in addressing those risks with a resilience mindset. She has deep expertise in cybersecurity and business continuity, and as you're about to discover, in leadership. Heather, welcome to Leader ReadyCast.
Thank you, Eric. Glad to be here with you today.
Really appreciate you joining us for this conversation. Now the Mayo Clinic is not your typical hospital. It's a massive enterprise. Can you just give us an idea of the scale and scope so that listeners understand the terrain you're navigating in this role?
Absolutely. So Mayo Clinic, which is the number one ranked hospital by U.S. News and World Report, as well as Newsweek, is the largest integrated nonprofit medical group practice in the world. We have about 76,000 caregivers that provide care for around 1.3 million people each year who have serious or complex illnesses. And our patients come from all 50 states and nearly 130 countries. So we have campuses, major campuses in Rochester, Minnesota, Phoenix and Scottsdale, Arizona, Jacksonville, Florida. We have an international campus in London and a whole network, a regional network of clinics, hospitals, and healthcare facilities that serve southern Minnesota, western Wisconsin, and northern Iowa.
So this was not a hard job for you. That sounds pretty simple.
Well,
no, it is right. It's much more complicated than a typical healthcare system. Absolutely.
It is.
And thank you for all the good work you do and everyone else at Mayo does, because there are a lot of people who are better off because of it.
It is absolutely our privilege to do so.
And I love that your title is Director of Technology Resilience. Because again, thinking across that vast enterprise, you've got so many risks that be popping up daily, and you've got to respond. You can't go down. You can't sort of stop things in the middle of a surgery, or a cancer care treatment. So, how do you think of resilience, and how did you decide to center your work on it?
So, for me, resilience is about incremental improvement. So, being better tomorrow than you are today. And when we go through hard things, which I'm not sure that I decided to center my work on it as much as it's central and core to who I am. But when we go through hard things, we can be stuck in them, we can be reduced by them, or we can be made better for them. And I've always lived with the idea that we should be better tomorrow than we are today. And I really try to carry that into my work.
And so, how does that approach affect how you lead and how you operate? I mean, does it change who you hire for your team or which vendors you work with? How does resilience, what does it look like on the ground as you're carrying it out?
So I think for us, resilience, a couple of things. One, we understand there's no perfection. And I think that's critically important in the leadership piece and in what we're doing and how we're doing it. We're not going to have a perfect finished product straight out of the gate. So we're going to look at what we can do and how we can improve upon that incrementally. And I think that's been the key to doing work like this in large organizations. Mayo Clinic is a very large and complex healthcare organization. Prior to Mayo Clinic, I did work like this for the Cleveland Clinic, which is also a similarly sized and complex organization. And what we found is that to effectively move the needle for really a paradigm shift in how we think and do things toward resilience, we have to do that with small wins. And the collection of those small wins, I often call it getting the nickels, right? Nickels get you quarters and quarters get you dollars. And that approach allows us to build as we go. It can't all be done at once. And we know, just as you mentioned, we can't stop things. We have to continue care for our patients. So the goal is we can't stop things from happening. We couldn't stop the pandemic. We can't stop all of the cyber things that are happening in the healthcare environment. But what we can do is be ready to respond and recover effectively. And so we look at things from the standpoint of impact mitigation. How can we minimize the impacts to our patients? How can we minimize not thinking about if something happens, but understanding when something happens? We have to be able to respond and recover so that the impacts of that are minimized for our patients. And I think that's the most important thing that we can do.
That's great. I love that you started with the assumption that you will not be perfect. One of the things I always push back on when people say, well, failure is not an option. It's like, well, failure is always an option. It may not be your preferred option, but you've got to realize it could happen. So how do you mitigate the possibilities that it's going to be the option that you get to? And I think that this approach you're talking about, getting the nickels and moving incrementally, is one of those things of just getting better every day so that failure may always be out there, but you're gonna push it farther away because you're getting better and better with each step you take. I really love that approach. I'm gonna borrow that getting the nickels, get some nickels approach. But don't worry, I'm good at footnoting, so you'll
No,
always
that's
get
great.
credit for it. I love
No,
that.
that's great. And it works if you're a football fan too, right? Two nickels will get you a first down.
That's right. That's right. It's 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, in Meta Leadership, the courses we teach here at the National Preparer Leadership Initiative, we speak about leading up to those whom you are accountable. How did you get the senior team at Mayo to buy into your approach? And was there any pushback? And if so, how did you overcome it?
So one of the things that I love about Mayo is that we all have a very clear and shared purpose, and it's around the needs of our patients. That comes first. So as long as we are all talking in that realm, it's not hard to garner buy-in because we are all passionate about caring for our patients. And what I know in this work, and one of the things, the reason I do this work in healthcare instead of other industries is because it matters. The work that we do to ensure that we can build resilience for the business, operational resilience, and technology resilience matters as far as caring for our patients, and it literally saves lives. So I don't put my hands on patients directly, but I care for our patients in that way. And that's what our team does. We care for our patients in that way, and it's all critical, important work. So that incremental approach comes up again, right? It always comes back to the increments and the relationships. We're building connection with the people within the organization, both our leaders and those who work alongside of us, and building that level of trust in that process. We understand from the core principle of the organization and who we are and what we're passionate about as caregivers that our patients' needs come first. And That is central and core to everything that we do. So then we take that incremental approach. Well, if we were at the very best, this is where we would be. This is sort of the platinum diamond encrusted desired end state. If we had the absolute best technology resilience of anything that could possibly be out there with all the bells and whistles, it would cost, fortunes, plural. But that's the goal. That's always the goal. Now let's start with where we are and figure out how we can get as close to that goal as possible in a meaningful way that matters for our patients and matters for our organization in a way that makes us good stewards of our resources. And as long as that's the path, it's not hard to get buy-in from our executive leadership teams. We all want the same thing. We want to be able to provide care for our patients. And so when we're grounded in that central purpose and desire, we can achieve anything we set out to do.
That's great. And I'm sure you've benefited as well. I also do a lot of work in healthcare, and we've learned a lot from the patient safety movement over the years, where, it turned out some of the biggest leaps forward in caring for patients came through things like making sure everybody washes their hands regularly. I mean, there were some simple things you could do, and color coding cables, and some basic things you could do, and it led to fairly large sustainable improvements in the delivery of care. And I think, again, your incremental approach to technology resilience reflects that as well, because it isn't just about buying the biggest, fanciest thing, which, as you mentioned, would cost several fortunes. But it's doing the right things in the right order and doing them well that gets you closer to that platinum, diamond encrusted end state. I'm going to remember that image as well, too. I think like a big Super Bowl ring sitting on your finger.
There you go. And that end in mind approach is really important. So we do this, my team, we do this, what I call blue sky strategy. We think about if there are no barriers, there are no barriers in resources or anything else, there are no barriers, what would this look like? And then we clearly articulate that. That becomes the guiding North Star. So we take that end in mind and then we work backwards. Here's where we are. And what are those incremental approaches? What are the things that we can do guided by risk, right? Are we tackling the things that pose the biggest threat to our ability to provide patient care first? And what are those things that are quick and easy things that we can do that don't require a lot of resources? So taking that approach where we've looked at from a risk-based perspective, what are the most important things we need to be doing? And what are the things that we can do that are easy, medium, or difficult? And how do we prioritize those things effectively to move the needle incrementally toward that desired end state? And it really is a critical lens. You have to always know where you're going so that the things that you're doing get you closer and aren't just boxes to check for the sake of checking boxes.
Now, I assume this all is just not Heather's job or Heather and the team's job, but you've got to engage the entire enterprise in this.
Absolutely.
And this is, we again at Meta Leadership talk about leading across to peers and other parts of the organization. And I know in my experience, a lot of people just sort of expect technology to be there and support them in what they do, but their work is something else. They don't think of themselves as tech workers, even though that what they're doing may be totally dependent upon the use of technology. How do you get them to embrace this approach to resilience and understand what their role in it may be, that you're supporting them, but they also have to support you? And what does that look like at an enterprise level as you engage all those 73,000 caregivers across the organization?
So relationships are critical. That's one of the most important things about this work. You asked about how do we hire team members and how do we select team members. And I will tell you that I'm less concerned about some of the things that are more practical, sort of technology skill sets or how to do a business impact analysis or how to do continuity planning specifically. I'm less concerned about those things. Not that they aren't important, but I'm more concerned about critical thinking skills, problem solving skills, innovation, communication, interpersonal communication and connection, because we have to build those relationships to do what you just talked about, right? So we have a lot of conversations, a lot of intentional and active listening happens in those conversations. And one of the best things that we can do is understand the perspective of those around us and what their needs are from a technology perspective. And then look at how we can encourage that creative problem solving. If the technology isn't there, what can we do instead to make sure that we've allowing some runway, in essence, for technology to be recovered? When you have healthcare organizations that go through cyber attacks, this is a whole different world than what traditionally we'd been prepared to do. Disaster recovery of yesterday is not what's necessary today. That's one of the reasons why we rebranded to technology resilience. The profession around disaster recovery, the idea around disaster recovery in healthcare and in other industries, was about if we had a smoking hole in the ground, if a meteor hit the data center, could we fail over to another location and continue working? And so a lot of the approach was this all or nothing. And it wasn't thinking about the technology at a more precise level, sort of at an asset level. And it wasn't allowing us to, we weren't thinking about what we could do day to day when there are disruptions that happen all the time because a cable got cut or this application had an upgrade and the upgrade didn't go quite as we thought it would. So there's disruptions that happen all the time. And we do our best to minimize those so that they're not felt by the end user. And really, that's what we're trying to accomplish, is that it's not felt by the end user and then therefore not felt by our patients. So when we're looking at this sort of transition from a traditional disaster recovery to a technology resilience, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about agility. We're talking about something that is more useful day to day and not just when the meteor strikes. And it serves us when the meteor strikes. But that traditional approach of just failing over doesn't work when it's a cyber attack. If you've got high availability, or you're saying we've got two copies of the information, we have one over here and we have a mirror copy of the information here, which is what happens when you fail over. You have the mirror copy in a different location. If I have a blemish on my face, when I look in the mirror, the blemish is there too. And that same idea holds true with cyber incidents. If your original is corrupted, then your mirror image is going to be corrupted too. So it requires a whole different approach. And thinking in those terms means that we have to do things differently, and we have to be ready in different ways. And so having those conversations and understanding with our peers and understanding that the things that we normally would do and the things that they normally would expect if it were a flood or a fire aren't things that hold true in cyber, that's a lot of the conversation. So there's a lot of education and again, a lot of listening and understanding the perspective of our caregivers and talking through what the options are. And just being very clear about the realities. There's nothing more important than clearly articulating if this happens, this is the impact that we're going to have to deal with. And now let's think about those impacts. Less concerned about what disrupts us and more concerned about what the impacts are, and bucketing those things in those same con sort of that same consequence planning. If we do that, then when things come that we didn't anticipate, we can still respond and react in a way that is helpful.
There's a lot to unpack there. I'm curious about how you find those people, because again, I come across a lot of people in business continuity and certainly in the cyberspace, and they love to nerd out on the technical stuff, right? They love to talk, and their analysis or the tools they're using. And that's great. They've got to be technically proficient. Absolutely. So, if you were interviewing me, you're interviewing one of our listeners, how would you go about finding those people, the person who does have the critical thinking skills, who does have the ability to build relationships, those other skills you're looking for? How do you suss out those people when you're from that vast sea of people who are highly technically competent, and that's what they love to put forward is that technical competence?
So I'm going to go back in the Wayback Machine a little bit to my
Okay.
time pre-Mayo, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the team in Cleveland, which amazing team. I had this incredible team of professionals around me in Cleveland. I have an amazing team at Mayo too, but I want to focus on the Cleveland team only because of what we had to do and how we had to do it.
Okay.
So we increased the size of the team in Cleveland. It more than doubled in a matter of months. And I was really concerned about increasing the team size that drastically, that quickly, and whether it would throw the chemistry off in the team. We had a team that worked well together. It was a very small team, but worked well together. And we were more than doubling it. So I was like, how are we going to do this in an effective way and make sure we get the right people? And this was the approach that we took. I did screening with candidates that came through. And if I felt they had, the basic skill set that we need, some of those technical things and the basic skill set that we need, they're articulate and I could share where they are and what they've been doing, just half hour screening interview. Then they would come to the interview with the entire team. And when we started, the team was super small. So there were, four of us in this panel interview. And we used value-based questions to try and get a feel for this person and their mindset and how they think through things and do some problem solving. But in those calls, I would sit back and the team would ask the questions. And they decided amongst themselves, here are the questions that we're going to ask, here are the things that we're focused on and concerned about. And then they'd take notes. And after the interview, we would gather just the team without the candidate. And there was a simple up down vote, yes, no. Is this the right person for our team? And I didn't vote. Everyone in the team would vote. And if there was one dissent, then the answer was no. Because we had to be certain that the candidate that we were going to offer the position to was someone that exhibited those things through that conversation in that value-based interviewing. And where the chemistry felt right for the team. And so the team was empowered. The team was empowered to help build the team, and we did it together. And it was, the CISO said this is one of the highest functioning teams we have inside of cybersecurity at the Cleveland Clinic. And that happened very quickly. And I'm certain that it was that approach where this was something that we were doing together. This is, it's never about me. It's never about me.
I just want to tease out a couple of things you said there because I think they're really interesting and very important. The team do this together. It was values-based questions, an up or down vote, which is interesting, and that you didn't vote is also interesting. As you said, empowering the team, and one dissenting voice means it's a no. So I get how you that gets you to really good fit. How does it keep you from getting to a team is too comfortable with itself? It's afraid of a provocateur who might actually shake things up in a good way.
Oh, because I think I'm one of those.
Okay.
So it's really interesting that approach. Everyone that came, that team, I'll tell you about the makeup of that team. We had a geologist.
Okay.
We had former retired military, two retired Marines and retired Army Ranger. So, I mean, there's when you got Marine and Army, Marines and Army together, you know that there's not everyone's not just always agreeing. That's
Yep.
okay. I had and one of those individuals was also a published author, strong
Okay.
communication skills. I had someone that had an audit background. She was a certified auditor, and had worked in the doing seizures for DOJ. So you had this super diverse group with a lot of different backgrounds. And what we were looking, what I look for when I start the screening are transferable skill sets. Again, I don't need you to necessarily know precisely how to do a business impact analysis, although they knew that. I can teach you those things, and I'm okay teaching those things because I can't teach you how to be a critical thinker. I can't teach you empathy. Those are things you have to have. And we all had that shared passion. The same thing we have at Mayo is this shared passion about what our purpose is and what we're accomplishing together. And we welcome the diverse thoughts and voices. It makes us better.
That's great. Now, beyond what you've shared so far, are there one or two other leadership lessons you think are particularly important for others who are in be it business continuity, cybersecurity, related areas like safety? What wisdom would you want to pass on to the next generation or to some peers who are going through a similar kind of challenge set that you've faced?
I think two things are critically important. You have to be okay with not being okay sometimes. And you have to be able to sit with each other in that. It's okay to say, I don't know. I'm not sure. I screwed up. Now we have to get the lesson from it and move forward through it together. And then the second thing is gratitude. One of the most important things that we can do is be grateful for the experiences, the people, the partnership, and express those things to each other. That builds cohesion in the team. It makes people want to work together and do things, and it helps give you perspective that it doesn't have to be perfect. I'm grateful for where we are and what we've accomplished here, and we're going to keep going. And it keeps that momentum going.
So it's a crazy world out there. You have a big, complex enterprise to worry about. I'm going to give you my final question. I give to all my guests because everybody I speak to on this podcast has a difficult job in a difficult world. What gives you hope?
The sun will rise tomorrow. We get to start new every day. And when I think about that, I think about it also in terms of my children, because outside of this big giant job, the bigger, more important job that I have is raising four amazing people. And they give me hope. They're the sun rising tomorrow, right? And when I look at the kids that are coming and the generation that's coming, there's so much hope in what they want to accomplish, the things that they're forcing us to reckon with and face in ourselves, where we have challenges and have had difficulties from this generation to the next, and the desire to continue to grow and always be better. That's what gives me hope.
That's great. I know I'm blessed to work with graduate students, and every year when they come through, I see those eager, enthusiastic faces who want to make the world a better place, and it really makes everything seem more manageable, and every accomplishment feels like it's within reach. So that's great. Thank you
Absolutely.
for this conversation. I'm Eric McNulty from the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative. My guest for this episode has been Heather Costa, Director of Technology Resilience at the Mayo Clinic. Until next time, remember
this
that
has been another episode of Leader ReadyCast from the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative. Subscribe to Leader ReadyCast wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and find out more about us at npli.sph.harvard.edu. Follow us on Twitter at @HarvardNPLI. Thanks for listening, and be ready to lead.